Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. Anna Kurajal was born in Russia but came to Ireland to live with her adoptive parents. Anna longed to have friends. It became almost an obsession to fit in with her peers. May 2018, a local teen knocked on Anna's door, asking her to come meet another teen boy that Anna had a long-time crush on. Anna leaving with the boy in the hopes of a new friendship, or maybe even love. She had no way of knowing she was walking into a cruel trap. Tragically, Anna would never return home. This is Anna's story. Anastasia was born February 18, 2004, in Western Siberia, Russia. She was almost immediately given up for adoption. In August of 2006, Geraldine and Patrick Kurajal travelled to Russia to adopt 2-year-old Anastasia, or Anna as she became known to those who knew and loved her. The new family returned to Lucan Island to start the next chapter in their lives. Geraldine and Patrick were the perfect parents for Anna. They were a happy and carefree couple who wanted a child more than anything but had been unable to naturally. Geraldine was a manager at a transport company and Patrick a retired French teacher. Anna's heritage was extremely important to them and they ensured Anna never lost that part of her. Welcoming her home to a set of babushka dolls proudly displayed on the mantelpiece in their living room. When she was only a small child, Anna underwent a complicated 5.5-hour surgery to remove a non-cancerous tumour from her right ear. Now, as with all surgeries, there are risks involved, and unfortunately, Anna would have long-term vision and hearing issues after this surgery. In fact, she was completely deaf in her right ear. Anna would always make sure she stood on someone's right side so she could hear them with her left ear. At home and with those Anna was closest to, they would describe her as having a big personality. You always knew how Anna was feeling. She loved to sing and dance. She attended a local dance school and would love nothing more than to come home and practice for hours on end. Anna was also a talented swimmer. She was beautiful, caring, kind, and strong-willed. Unfortunately, kids can be assholes. Yes, I said it. And because she was adopted and her disabilities, she was a target for bullies. Anna struggled to make friends. She was tall for her age. At 14, she was 5'8" and looked older than what she was. Anna had short-term memory loss and she wasn't an academic. But she wanted nothing more than to fit in with her peers. Anna did have a few friends, but was better described as somewhat of a loner. Most of her friends were her younger cousins. Geraldine would later state that when she picked Anna up after school, she would see groups of girls walking together and laughing, but then Anna would be walking alone with her headphones on. Anna would also be easily influenced by her peers because Anna would always see the best in people. And as I mentioned before, she so desperately wanted to make friends. Something that Geraldine would later find on her daughter's phone was a photo of Anna tied to a chair and blindfolded, which would have been concerning for any mother. But Anna would just laugh it off as a prank to try and get a boy's attention, to see if he would come and rescue her. Anna was extremely naive and sensitive, and because she looked a lot older than her early teen years, she would receive quite sexually explicit messages online on social media. And really violent ones too, which for someone going through puberty and already emotional, that can be quite damaging. One particular message to Anna said, quote, "I'd like to have you executed," unquote. Geraldine and Patrick felt so powerless that they took screenshots of these messages and took them to show Anna's school, hoping to get their support and guidance, and also so they could keep an eye on Anna and the bullying. But instead of supporting the Kriegels and Anna, Anna would be suspended for painting a black eye on her face, Geraldine believing this was a reflection of the pain she felt inside at being bullied by her classmates. Interestingly, it would later come out that Anna set up fake social media accounts to send some of these horrible messages to herself. Now, I don't pretend to be a psychologist or anything like that, and I couldn't find any further information than that on why Anna was doing this. But in my unprofessional opinion, I think these messages, like the fake black eye, they were a reflection of the pain Anna was feeling within herself and the poor self-confidence she had. In my opinion, it wasn't for attention or to manipulate the situation. It was more like she was a young girl in a lot of emotional anguish, and she didn't know how to handle it any way else but to put it out there how she viewed herself. It is so incredibly heartbreaking. I wish I could go back in time and give this kid a massive hug and let her know that things do get easier, that she would grow into herself and finish school and find her place in the world. And Anna did have big hopes for her future. When she started high school, she wrote, quote, "My hope is to go to Paris University like my father, the hardest one to get into. And when I get home from Paris, I want to get a dog. I would like to get married, not sure about babies. Not yet, anyway. I hope to have a good life. I hope everyone I meet will be nice." Unquote. However, sadly, Anna would never get the opportunity to go to university, buy a dog and to get married, to decide whether or not she wanted babies. Instead, her life would be stolen from her in a brutal and horrific way, her life taken by two boys her own age. Geraldine and Patrick were beyond concerned for their daughter. She was getting into fights at school and she was always sad. They were worried as soon as Anna left the house. They would drive her to and from school just so they could make sure she was safe. They also wanted her to see a therapist because maybe she didn't feel comfortable speaking to her parents, but she would a trained professional. Geraldine and Patrick approached Kilcare Youth Services, but they told the worried parents they couldn't help because Anna had self-harmed. Now, this is really confusing to me. I mean, I'm sure they have their reasons, but this is obviously a child in need, and to just say no without any plan or options, it seems irresponsible. Ultimately, Geraldine and Patrick did find a charity to help Anna, who specialised in teens who self-harmed or had suicidal thoughts. And she was going there and everything seemed to be looking more positive. This charity organisation said in their opinion, Anna was at low risk of suicide. And this is when Kilcare Youth Services agreed to take over the psychological care of 14-year-old Anna. One particular concerning incident occurred in October 2017, 6 months before her murder. Anna had volunteered for a Halloween dance for the primary school that she had attended herself when she was younger. The event ended early, but Anna didn't want to disturb her parents. Maybe she wanted some independence and she decided to walk home. On this walk home, Anna was approached by four older boys in the street who asked Anna for sex. They got right in her personal space, touching her, one of the boys smacking her on her behind. Now, this would have frightened me, and I'm an adult, let alone a vulnerable young teenage girl. She was shaken, and she ran the rest of the way home. By the time she walked in the front door, Anna was hysterical, understandably. Geraldine would later state it took her an hour to calm Anna down, to find out what really happened here. This incident was reported to police, and the boys were issued with a caution. But Geraldine would later state in interviews that this experience was the last straw for Anna. That after this she spiralled into a deep depression and self-harm. That the once bright light that was her daughter was dimmed forever. Sunday, May 16, 2018. Anna was a little stressed. She had a number of exams at school the following week and she'd been studying all weekend. Geraldine promised her daughter she would sit down with her and the two could go over some of the notes together. But then Anna insisted her mother was too tired. They were expecting family over that night, and that in itself was stressful after a long work week. So instead, the two had a day of movies and popcorn. That night was family and pizza, except for Anna, who really didn't like pizza. So Geraldine organised her some Chinese food. And while the adults drank and talked and laughed, Anna was upstairs with her cousins, playing and being a kid. Before going to bed, Anna asked Geraldine to wake her before she left for work to say goodbye, which she did the next morning. Monday, May 17th, 2018. That afternoon, Anna was to leave school early to go to a counselling session, of which Geraldine reminded her about. That afternoon, Anna got home around 4:30 and was greeted by her father. The two ate some hot chips together, and around 5 p.m, Anna went to her room to study some more. Not long after that, there was a knock at the door. When Patrick answered, there was a boy around Anna's age who was asking for her. Patrick had never seen this boy before, so when he went up to Anna's room to tell her this boy was there to see her, she was also confused. Now, due to the age of this boy, he was 13 years old. The identity of this boy and his 14-year-old accomplice have been redacted. So from here on through, the 13-year-old boy that called for Anna will be known as Boy B, and the 14-year-old boy who will become part of the story later will be known as Boy A. Their identities are out there and easy to find with a quick Google search. However, there have been harsh penalties for those who directly name the boys, which is why I am not naming them. Not out of any respect for these boys. More that I don't want to have to start a GoFundMe to bail me out of jail. Anna knew Boy B, but they weren't friends. They didn't mix in the same friendship circles. Anna went out to speak to the boy and Patrick simply left them. He was actually happy more than anything that his daughter had a potential friend come visit with her. Next thing Patrick knew, Anna was racing up the stairs to her room and then back down wearing a black hoodie. She asked her father if she could go out for a while. Patrick was uncertain. He knew Anna had exams but also happy for his daughter to have a friend to go out with. And she seemed so happy. Patrick would later state he watched his daughter walk away. Anna walked behind Boy B and it didn't appear the two were talking. Patrick never asked where they were going because he trusted his daughter, and she had been doing well and she deserved more responsibility. But they were headed towards St. Catherine's Park, and this was around 5:30 p.m. Not long after this, Geraldine attempts to call Anna on her way home from work to see how the counselling session went and how the studying was going, but there was no answer to her cell phone. Now, she wasn't overly concerned. She was almost home and she would just catch up with her daughter then. Geraldine got home just before 6, so Anna had been gone around 20 to 30 minutes at this point. And when Patrick told her that Anna had gone out with Boy B, Geraldine was immediately concerned. With everything Anna had gone through with the bullying and such, and Anna wasn't answering her phone, maternal instinct kicked in and she needed to know her daughter was okay when she knew something wasn't quite right. Geraldine texted Anna, telling her she was home and that she needed to come back. There was no reply. Geraldine would later state this was when panic truly set in. It didn't matter where Anna was or what she was doing. She would always text back right away. Even if it was just, "I can't right now, Mum," she would always text something back. But Geraldine received nothing from her daughter. Geraldine wanted to find Anna. She and Patrick took off and went for a walk around the estate and down towards St. Catherine's Park. There were people everywhere enjoying the late spring evening weather, but Anna was nowhere to be seen. Trying not to completely fall apart, Geraldine and Patrick went home and distracted themselves preparing dinner. Anna still had not returned home, even though she knew she was supposed to be home by now. Geraldine and Patrick got into the car to look for Anna again, and they just drove. Drove around their neighbourhood and surrounding neighbourhoods. Anna was known to go for long walks, something she did to clear her head, so she could literally be anywhere, but there just wasn't any sign of their daughter. They then had the idea to look for the boy that Anna left the house with, because if they could find him, They would know if Anna was still with him or maybe where she went after that. They would at least know more than they knew now. They knew Boy B by name, and that was about it. And a quick call around to people they knew. They didn't know where he lived either. A dead end. At a loss what to do next, the family called a family friend who was a retired detective. He told the worried parents they needed to go right to the Garda. And the Garda is the police in Ireland. At this point, Anna had been missing for almost 4 hours. Geraldine and Patrick reported their daughter as missing at 9 p.m. Geraldine and Patrick went into the Garda station and reported Anna missing. But the officers didn't seem concerned, basically telling the parents that Anna was 14 years old and kids run away all the time at her age, that she would most likely return the next day. That there had been reports of several teenagers Anna's age who ran away and then returned home a day or two later. That Anna would as well, not to worry. Geraldine and Patrick weren't leaving the Garda station without at least something done, to make sure Anna was okay. They gave the Garda the name of the boy Anna left with, and they agreed to do a welfare check to Boy B's home. Here, his mother answered the door, and she was present when the Garda questioned Boy B about Anna. He straight out refused to have any idea about Anna and where she was now. That he left her at the park early that evening and he went home. It would have been a sleepless night for Geraldine and Patrick. By morning and there was no sign of Anna, family and friends got together and started the search again, just trying to look everywhere to see if they could find the missing teen. They spoke to everyone they passed in the chance someone had seen her. Unfortunately, no one had. At the insistence of the Craigles, the Garda went back to Boy B's home and questioned him further about the previous day, to see if he had any further information. And this return visit paid off. Boy B was now saying that he took Anna to the park to go see another boy, Boy A, who they knew Anna had a crush on. Apparently, Boy A wasn't interested, and the plan was for him to let Anna down gently, because 14-year-old boys are known for their tact. Boy B even took the Garda to the spots they went with Anna that afternoon and where they went their separate ways. After this, they took Boy B back home. At this point, the Garda was taking Anna's disappearance seriously. Maybe she was upset by the heartbreak, and with her known history of depression and self-harm, there was definitely some urgency here to locate Anna. Anna's photo and description were released to the news media, and leads did come in quickly. One person reporting seeing Anna in South Dublin. Another sighting had Anna at the departures section at Dublin Airport. The Garda spoke to Boy A and his father, and they told them they should go search behind the sewerage plant because it was a popular hangout spot for teenagers to go. And given Boy A was one of the last two people to see Anna, the Garda did exactly that. Boy A even agreeing to take the Garda to this spot, and also show them where he and Boy B went with Anna. Strangely, this route Boy A showed them and where he claimed he left Anna, it was completely different to Boy B's story. It was clear more was going on than both boys were letting on. Boy A and Boy B were taken to the Garda station for their official statements. Police had noticed that Boy A was injured. He was limping and holding his arm. When asked what happened, he claimed that shortly after leaving Anna, he was jumped by two older boys, but he was able to fight them off. He said he kicked one of them in the head before he ran off. This sounded kinda unbelievable for the investigators, but maybe if this did happen, maybe these two older boys knew what happened to Anna or they saw something. So investigators took Boy A's boots for forensic testing. In his official interview, Boy A said he ran into his best friend, Boy B, earlier the day Anna went missing, but they made plans to meet in the park that afternoon because he was busy until then. When he got to the park, he saw Boy B and Anna together, that he recognised Anna from school but didn't really know her. The trio chatted for a while until Anna asked Boy A out on a date. He said he wasn't interested and Anna got angry and stormed off. That he didn't know where Anna went after this point. According to Boy B's official interview, he claimed he was just the middleman. That boy A knew that Anna had a crush on him and he had asked him to bring her to the park to meet with him. And then boy B just left. That he had no idea what happened or where Anna went after that. Interestingly, in his interview, boy B insisted that he and boy A were only acquaintances and not the best friends that boy A alleged they were. In their search for Anna, investigators scoured over more than 700 hours of CCTV footage trying to track where she went. But when the route boy B said he and Anna walked was checked, he wasn't in any of the footage. Same when the route boy A said the three of them went was looked into. Again, it was clear something was suspicious here. There was too many inconsistencies. May 20th, 2018, 3 days after Anna was last seen. St. Catherine's Park was being searched grid style, inch by inch for any sign of the missing girl. And this was no easy feat. It's 200 acres large and full of dense bushland. There are ditches and uneven terrain. So many places where Anna could be hurt and in need of medical assistance. In this park is an abandoned 19th century farmhouse known as Glenwood House. And this farmhouse is not in good condition. It is condemned. Parts of the roof have caved in and it has been damaged by fire. All of the windows were boarded up. The place was littered with trash and graffiti and drug paraphernalia. It was known for drug activity and squatters. Not the nicest place to be. But maybe if Anna was going through it, maybe she was there. So investigators wanted to search the farmhouse too. As soon as one of the investigators entered the room, he would later state he could smell dry blood and decomposition. In the corner of the room amongst piles of garbage and broken glass, the investigator could see a shape. At first he thought it was a mannequin, but it wasn't. Unfortunately, what this investigator had discovered was the body of 14-year-old Anna Kriegel. Anna had been stripped down to only her socks. She had significant injuries to her head and neck, deep lacerations to her scalp, blood in her hair, bruising on her thigh. Anna had industrial tape tightly wound around her neck. Horrifically, Anna's fingers were found underneath the tape as if she was trying to remove it when she died. Anna's autopsy report showed this beautiful teen sustained around 60 injuries in total. Many of these were defensive wounds, showing Anna had fought for her life. The coroner determined there was evidence of sexual assault. Her genitals showed signs of attempted penetration and semen was found on Anna's clothing. Her cause of death determined to be blunt force trauma. However, she had been strangled throughout the ordeal, which contributed to her death. Everyone's worst fears were realised, and this was no longer a missing person search but a murder investigation. The forensic results were returned from boy A's boots, and it definitely gave investigators something. Blood was found on his boots, and not some random older boy who attacked him either. The blood belonged to Anna. The semen found on Anna's clothing was tested, and came back an undeniable match to boy A. Also found in boy A's room was what has been described as a murder kit, containing a mask, gloves, protective legwear, a concrete block, a piece of wood with nails sticking out of the end, and blue industrial tape. The same tape wrapped around Anna's neck when she was found. Anna's blood would also be found on several of the items in the murder kit. Further searches of the boys' bedrooms would find they developed an obsession with violent pornographic material. Found on the computer and phone owned by boy A, 12,000 violent sexual images, and Google searches including child porn, teen sweet Russian, most gruesome torture methods in history, and abandoned places in Lucan. Boy A and boy B were arrested and brought in for interrogation. Due to their young ages, remember they are only 13 and 14 years old. Their parents were told 24 hours before the arrest was going ahead, and they were taken away in unmarked police cars with plain-clothed officers. Their parents were present for all interviews. Boy A flat out denied being involved, that he had no idea how Anna's blood got on his belongings and his semen on her clothes. On the other hand, Boy B was more talkative. While there was no forensic evidence to place Boy B at the farmhouse where Anna was found, eyewitnesses saw him there that afternoon. This was when Boy B crumbled under the pressure. He admitted he took Anna to Glenwood House at Boy A's request, that he let Anna walk ahead into the room where Boy A was waiting. But then he heard a scuffle and a muffled scream. Scared, Boy B said this was when he ran, that he didn't know what happened because he thought if Anna was being attacked by someone, Boy A would protect her. Boy B said that after Anna went missing, he knew Boy A was responsible. Because several weeks earlier, Boy A told him he wanted to murder Anna Creagel. But Boy B didn't take him seriously at the time. That he knew Boy A wanted Anna there that day and he was to leave immediately. For the record, Boy A would later deny this conversation ever happened and that Boy B was making it up. Both boys were charged with murder. Boy A was also charged with aggravated sexual assault. And although these charges carry mandatory life sentences for adults in Ireland, the same doesn't apply to minors. And despite the overwhelming amount of evidence implicating both boys, Boy A and Boy B both plead not guilty. April 29th, 2019. Boy A and Boy B were brought before the Central Criminal Court for trial. Both sets of parents stood by their sons in support. Boy A appearing visibly upset in the criminal trial, holding his father's hand while his mother cried. June 18, 2019, after 14 hours of deliberation, Boy A and Boy B were both found guilty. Justice Paul McDermott thanked the jury and excused them from any further jury duty for life. When the guilty verdict was read, Boy B stared at the ground and held on to his mother. His father flew into a rage, storming out of the courtroom, before returning, clapping sarcastically and shouting, quote, "An innocent child is going to prison, you fucking bunch of scumbags," unquote. Both boys were taken to Oberstown Children Detention Campus in Dublin, awaiting sentencing scheduled for July 15, 2019. But this would be delayed 4 months for psychological evaluations that were in the process of being completed. November 2019. Boy A and Boy B became two of the youngest convicted killers in the history of Ireland. Boy A received a life sentence with the possibility of parole after 12 years. He was given an additional 12 years for aggravated sexual assault and placed in the Sexual Offenders Registry. Both the murder and sexual assault sentences will run concurrently. He will be eligible for release at 26 years old. Boy B was sentenced to 15 years imprisonment with the possibility of parole after 8 years. He will be eligible for release at 23 years old. Both boys will walk free in their 20s and be able to live full and happy lives, something that Anna will never be able to do. Both boys would be transferred to an adult prison when they turn 18. Boy A would go on to admit to murdering Anna Creagel, but denied any attempt of sexual abuse. Boy B continues to deny any involvement in the plan to kill Anna to this day. Outside the court, Anna's father Patrick tearfully addressed the waiting media, quote, "Forever is not long enough. Anna was our strength," unquote. Standing by her husband's side, Anna's mother Geraldine added, quote, "Anna was a dream come true for us, and she will always be. She will stay in our hearts, forever loved and forever cherished. We love you, Anna," unquote. At Anna's funeral, Geraldine and Patrick Creagel requested no one wear black, but sparkles and lots of colour, to reflect the true joy and happiness Anna brought to everyone who loved her. A Russian flag was draped over her coffin, along with a set of babushka dolls. Buried with Anna was a picture of the family dog, her blue headphones, and a little figure of the Eiffel Tower to remember Anna's dream of studying in Paris, just like her father. Geraldine and Patrick are determined that Anna's legacy lives on. They created two charities in her name, ANA, which stands for Anna's Network of Adolescents, and RIAG, Russian-Irish Adoption Group, These charities exist to help other Russian-Irish teens like Anna transition into life in another culture and supports them as they navigate any issues that come up from that. Geraldine and Patrick also had a friendship bench put up at Lexlip Manor Hotel, close to St. Catherine's Park, a place where Anna and Patrick would have lunch together regularly. A place where the Creagels and others can go to remember Anna and to make sure others never feel alone.
Anna's mother was present in court with members of her family today. Her husband, Patrick Creagel, he passed away earlier this year. The Court of Appeal said it wanted to convey its deepest sympathies to Anna's family.
If you have your own thoughts and theories on the case we discussed today, or any case we talk about on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives on Facebook. Like the page so you don't miss an episode and join the discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Twitter, search lives_stolen, or on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.